Welcome to episode 140 of Industry Misinterpretations with James Robertson and Michael Lucas-Smith. This week we talk about interfacing to Objective-C and, generally speaking, platform integration. If you have feedback on this or any other episode of Industry Misinterpretations, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. You can also head on over to iTunes and leave a comment for us. We would really appreciate it if you did that. You can head on over to Podcast Alley, cast a vote for the podcast. And, of course, you can interact with us in the Industry Misinterpretations group at Facebook and the Small Talkers group at Ning. This is James Robertson, Syncom Small Talk Product Evangelist. I'm here with Michael Lucas-Smith, our lead on the Web Velocity project.
G'day.
And we're going to talk about the Objective-C runtime that Michael and Travis and a few other people have been working on. Why don't you just give us a background on where this came from and what it's going to do for us?
Okay, so there's a fairly long history of Objective-C interfaces in VisualWorks. Not in Object Studio, because it's a Windows-only product. Not that you can't get Objective-C for Windows, and some people do, but it's just not something people normally do. In fact, there's also Objective-C for general Unix, and not many people seem to do that as well. But in terms of actual use of Objective-C, it's everywhere on Mac. It's, you know, the heart and soul of Mac.
What's the system programming language, just like C is for Windows or Unix, right?
That's pretty much the case, yeah. So it's definitely worth being able to talk to Objective-C from Smalltalk on Mac. So there are lots of attempts in the past to make Objective-C interfaces, and one of the things that every single one of them got wrong was the separation between the runtime and interpreting how you want to use the Objective-C interface.
So does that mean that people were trying to make it too Smalltalky, or what do you mean by that?
Well, yeah, I mean, okay, so say you've got a pointer to an Objective-C object. How are you going to send messages to that? Do you have a concrete class in the image that has DLLCC calls on it? Do you generate a lightweight class interface to it? Do you use a does not understand and perform the messages on it? You know, all of those are decisions that somebody has made for
right,
you.
Right, and that last one would be sort of the common, overly clever type of interface, as I recall.
The DNU? Well, it's the simplest thing that could possibly
right,
work.
Right, it's the way you typically work with anything that's going to proxy for you.
Right. So, choosing one of those, they have implications. If you're making these heavyweight classes that are installed into the system, suddenly you're going to have hundreds and hundreds of classes in your system.
Well, eventually, don't you end up getting into kind of the same problem you'd have? I mean, if you're going to try to map the entire Objective-C NS runtime, say, into Smalltalk, it would be kind of like trying to put Smalltalk on, say, the .NET VM or the Java VM, where you'd have this whole parallel set of infrastructure that you sort of kind of already got a copy of.
Yeah, and a lot of people seem to think that that's a great idea. I'm not one of those people. So the next scenario, which is the DNU one, you have virtually no information and you can't make it run fast. Because any perform that you do is A, doing a perform in the Smalltalk, possibly, and the DNU handling, and then you're doing an Objective-C perform, which means you're going to use the slow C calls instead of the fast C calls. Now, previous attempts also ignored the types.
Well, actually, hang on just a second there, because I'm not entirely, you know, my knowledge of DLLCC is dated probably back into the late 90s somewhere, so when you say fast calls instead of slow calls, what do you mean by that?
Well, there's two primitives. Well, it's more than two, but there's two primitives that matter. There's the fast calls and slow calls. Fast calls try to get in your way as little as possible. Slow calls try to get in your way as much as possible. So if you have a fast call, then calling a Smalltalk method stops the Smalltalk execution stack at that point and jumps to the C code and comes back and does very little work. If you do the slow call, it emulates the entire execution of argument transformations and stack creation, all that kind of stuff, and you end up doing a lot of work to make the call.
Isn't that also the safe way of calling C code, where if you have problems on the C side, it'll attempt to recover from them?
No, that's a bit of a misnomer. Okay. Our VM tries to catch all that anyway, all the time. So, yeah, that's the difference between the fast and the slow. So if you can live with the slow, then that's fine. You don't care. Another thing that previous attempts have not done is attempted to correctly capture the runtime type information. So if the arguments are object, float, structure, that was sort of left up to the person doing the calling to get that right. And create some sort of DLLCC interface that would work with that. But Objective-C comes with this ability to read the type information. So we now, well, I guess I haven't got on to what we're doing now, but in 7.7 we have a Objective-C runtime interface, and that is not an Objective-C connect. So we're making no value assumptions about exactly how you want to use the interface. We're not giving you a DNU, we're not creating lightweight classes, we're not creating heavyweight classes. We're just providing the runtime interface. And it doesn't even have the ability to actually send messages in any fast way. It has the ability to create C procedure types from the runtime type information. And then you can use those to send messages. And we have some utility convenience methods there to do that. But at this level, we're talking purely about interfacing to the Objective-C C library, not the Objective-C objects. So on top of that, then we have these value assertions about how you would want to use that. And I've just finished putting together a package called Objective-C Connect, and I've sent it off to review. And it uses the runtime interface in 7.7 to create lightweight classes that aren't installed into the environment so that you get these fast calls. I do some other tricky stuff in there as well, such as I have a subclass of namespace, and it does dynamic lookups of Objective-C classes and creates the lightweight class interfaces. So as you're running the application, it's building fast class interfaces to the Objective-C world, and you can look up these classes just using regular namespaces. So you don't have to even send a message to say, get me NS string. You just say, you're root Objective-C NS string. And if you import that namespace, you can just say NS string, and then you've got your NS string.
Okay, so you've got this all namespace down in kind of a lightweight fashion down there.
Right. So, I mean, this is what I'm saying, is that at the level that Objective-C Connect lives, I'm making assumptions about how someone would want to talk to Objective-C. And I'm making those assumptions based on my experience of having done it multiple different ways. I'm pretty sure this is the way that will work best for most people. But it still might not be the way that you want to interface to Objective-C. So the intention here is that the Objective-C runtime is separated from how we then use it. So if you want to come along to 7.7 and create heavyweight classes, you can do so. If you want to use the DNU trick, you can do so. And if you want to use my stuff, then you'll be able to load up this puzzle.
So this is kind of analogous, if I wanted to do this and make an analogy to database interfacing. You've got GLORP, which is doing your object relational mapping. But if you didn't want to do any of that and just wanted to dump straight SQL to a database, you can always bail down to the EXDI level, and then you could decide you're just going to dump straight SQL to a database, and then if you had a different sort of mapping you wanted to do, you could say, I'm not interested in GLORP, I want to build my own. So you provided this runtime, which is sort of the low-level way of talking to the system, and then there's a higher level for the connect that you're putting on top of that.
That's correct. So you had a question about dialogues. There is more to the history of this. So let's see if I can name all the implementations. We got the Heeg Objective-C interface, yeah, which became out of date. So it never supported anything beyond, I think, about 10.0 or 10.1.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or maybe 10.2. It's pretty old now. And it was the heavyweight stuff. So all of these implementations don't really distinguish between the runtime and then how you use it. So it generated classes, and it did so using categories. It wasn't really aware of packages, which was another, sort of outdated thingness to it. Then there's another thing called Obj-C Connect, which seemed to be attempting to do what I did, except that it didn't have the runtime type information and didn't have a proper runtime on it either. Then there was Travis's simple Objective-C connect. I can't remember what he called it, though, which was the smallest, minimalist possible interface that he could possibly throw together to make Cairo work. There was another version of that, which was slightly evolved, that I did for an AR going into 7.7, which is now integrated, which is to get the focused window. That code's been removed now because we have a proper interface. Then there was my Objective-C runtime 2.0, which I did for OpenGL, which was the catalyst for the work that just recently happened, which provided a proper runtime interface with RTTI information, but it wasn't complete, and it made assumptions.
Is this the one you were talking with about me a while ago, where you were kind of on a mania to try to generate those NS classes? And you started off saying it took you, I don't know, some ungodly amount of time to generate one, and then you had gotten it down to something like 30 seconds?
Well, no, this is even prior to that. So this used the DNU trick to do message sense. So it didn't achieve the fast goal. And then, the next version of this, I wanted to achieve the fast goal, which was to create these hard classes with DLLC methods. And yeah, installing all these, the entire runtime system in took a while until I got it running faster. And after having achieved that, I realized that I didn't like it. So that was one dead end there. There have been... Then there's Andre Schnorr's Objective-C work, which also used heavyweight classes and didn't distinguish the runtime from separate from that. It had the same problem of, okay, I don't know how to deal with types. So he had lots and lots of messages to deal with different types. There were DLLC-C functions to try and make it run fast. So you would get one that returned a float, and one that returned a structure, and one that returned a different kind of structure, one that took a float argument, one that took, you know, variations for every different thing under the sun. However, there are way too many Objective-C calls that vary wildly as to how you do that.
That sounds like the kind of idea that you start down that track because it seems simple, and then over time you end up in complexity hell that you can't really get out of.
Right. So recently this kind of came to a head with our Objective-C interfaces. So we've got one running in Cairo, we've got one running in OpenGL, and then we have some work from Andre Schnorr to do things like native file dialogues and print dialogues, which was being integrated, and it did it yet another way. And none of these approaches, I stress that none of them got it right. You know, none of us really broke down the essence of what we were trying to achieve here, which was taking away the effort and the work for the next guy who comes along trying to interface to Objective-C. So that's where we came along and we reviewed all these different Objective-C interfaces and basically said, okay, I think this is what we want here. We don't want to try and interpret how you want to talk to Objective-C. We just want the runtime. So with the runtime, we can now pop up the dialogues and we can do Cairo and we can do OpenGL. However, it's not necessarily the nicest way to interface to Objective-C because you really want to pretend that you have real objects. And that's where the Objective-C Connect package comes in, which... I hope will end up being in preview for 7.7.
Okay, so the runtime is what would actually be resident to support things like file dialogues and print dialogues, right?
Right. However, the code that you would write to pop up a dialog using the runtime versus the code that you write with Objective-C Connect. So with Objective-C Connect, it looks like Smalltalk code. You know, you say, okay, file, NS file, dialogue, open, here's your settings, blah, blah, blah. With the runtime, it's more like, okay, get me a class and I'll assign that to a variable. Now class perform this message to get me that object. Now object perform this message to do this. So it's a series of performs. It doesn't do any implicit type conversions for you. You know, if you want a boolean back, that's a one and a zero. You have to compare that one and a zero to Objective-C runtime, yes and no. You got to do all the work yourself. You don't automatically convert points to NS point and rectangles to NS rects, and you don't convert strings to NS strings, and all the things that the Objective-C Connect does for you, you have to do for yourself when you do it using the runtime. So you end up writing more code, and it's not clear code. I mean, it's clear code, but it's not as clear as... It's clear as mud. It's not as clear as when you use Objective-C Connect.
So what would be the motivation for using that for things like file and print dialogues instead of just loading in the Objective-C Connect and having the easy way about it?
Well, for us in the base image where we want to support this stuff, you know, if you load up Objective-C Connect, it adds a whole bunch of extensions to a whole bunch of classes. And it uses techniques that are you know, potentially suspect. You know, it generates methods dynamically, generates classes dynamically. That's not your typical small talk base image behavior, right? The base image is very predictable, very obvious. This is definitely a flavor.
Okay, and also since the base image is portable across multiple platforms, you wouldn't necessarily want all that stuff sitting in an image that you're going to run, say, in Linux, because it's basically serving no purpose other than bloat.
Yeah, except it's tiny. One of the goals was to make sure we didn't really have that much code.
Right, but it's still sitting there uselessly.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, so it adds flavor to the way that you program in Smalltalk when dealing with Objective-C. And not everyone's going to agree with the way that I've done it, which is why it's going to be, you know, a goodie instead of something in the base. But so then it comes down to the question of, okay,
well,
if
no,
we
want
to interface to...
Is it going to be a contributed piece or is it going to be sitting in preview? Because, I mean, and the reason I ask, okay, I think I just swallowed part of a nut. The reason I ask is that if it's in contributed, there's not necessarily an expectation that it's going to move forward. Whereas if it's in preview, there's always that expectation that it's going to move forward. So is it going to sit in preview or contrib?
Preview, but by moving forward, we don't mean integrated into base.
Well, no, moving forward doesn't necessarily mean integrated into base. It just means that that gives people an expectation that while it may still evolve, I mean, being in preview doesn't mean that it's baked, but it does give people the notion that if it's sitting in preview, it's going to eventually migrate out into being a supported part of the product. Whereas if it's in contrib, there's no such expectation. It could migrate from contrib, but there's, you know, no guarantee that it'll ever do that.
So for us, when we want to interface to Objective-C from the base image, we basically have to use the runtime. But for you interfacing to Objective-C, you can use things like the Objective-C Connect or your own thing and do it the easier way.
Okay, so to take a concrete example of that, in the base, we probably wouldn't support the Mac menu bar for the development environment. But if you're building an application, like, you know, Bottom Feeder, for instance, or, see, I have to mention that in every podcast. If you're building something that's going to run on the Mac, you know, just to be more current, maybe I'm building an interface to FriendFeed or Twitter, you could put a Mac menu on that and have it look more native than, say, what a typical VisualWorks application looks like on the Mac platform.
Yep, and it turns out that's actually pretty easy to do. I knocked up native Mac menus. I did a little screencast of it on my blog. It was the quick and dirty hack. It modified global state by changing this global menu concurrently, so sometimes it broke, but you can fix that with a semaphore.
Right, but I think that's pretty much what Andre Schnorr did too, isn't it? Pretty much he had a global piece of state that he modified?
Yeah, I mean, that's the way you do it. And it's really easy to do with the Objective-C Connect. The code that you write is very natural, very Objective-C-like, except you don't have to put quite as many square brackets there. I have an Objective-C callback class that you can use to hook up actions from the runtime, like the UI menus to Smalltalk code. And that makes it super easy to run. And yeah, it works.
Now, from what you were showing in that screencast, it looks like you can take existing menus and migrate them over to the Mac menu bar.
Yeah. So I just made it, you take a menu object and I just iterate over it, creating the Objective-C menu items and NS menus and NS menu items and hook up the action and, you know, that kind of stuff. And once you've got that, you can just set it to the global applications main menu. So then I made a Mac OS X menu bar and I set that as the default menu bar for the Mac OS X look and feel. And it just swaps in and swaps out the global menu based on that. And it worked. Yeah.
No, I mean, in the screencast, you showed moving from one window to the next and having the menu migrate. So if I'm in the inspector, suddenly I see the inspector up at the top. I go to the browser, I see the browser up at the top and so on. And that's, you know, at least on the Mac, that's the way people expect things to work.
Yeah. Yeah, it looked pretty good. I think I'll probably redo that code at some point. I don't know whether it's a good thing or not, to be honest, as in, you know, like behavior-wise, as a development environment.
Well, for the development environment, that's questionable. Certainly for applications, I think it's, you know, whether you like the single menu or not, it's the way things are done on the Mac. So if you've got an application...
Well, to be honest, our menus in general in VisualWorks aren't that useful. Like, if you go into the RB and you look at all the menu items that we have there, it's a classic reiteration of other behavior that's available from pop-up menus and stuff like that. Contextual information pulled out of context. It's not stellar in terms of what you would, you know, I would you know, if we had a billion space cycles, these are one of the many things that I would go through and change. So, and the same thing from the launcher. The launcher is just a dumping ground of menu items.
Well, I'm laughing, but you're actually right, because there's a bunch of things that you do in the launcher that don't necessarily make sense in the context of the launcher. It's just sort of an inertia thing that they're all there.
Yeah. So, and you know, most of the time, I mean, I guess what I would probably do is, for the development environment, set the main menu of the application to be the launcher's menu and probably remove the menus from every other tool. But it's not quite that clear cut and simple.
Well, I mean, if you think about the browser, support would go crazy, yeah. But if you think about the browser, just to take that as an example, I'm not sure there's any behavior in the main menu for the browser that is not available as a context menu in the appropriate pane. So, you know.
No, there is stuff like as edit, view, find, browse. So you can open up new windows, you can do undo, redo, refresh, find things. But it's not to say that, you know, those things couldn't be done other ways.
Well, the find, you've also got the find little search box up at the top, so.
Which is useless unless you load Searchlight, really. I mean, I know a lot of developers who turn off the toolbar in the RB because they don't find any of the options that are useful. And only recently have they turned them back on to use Searchlight, not to use any of the actual toolbar things, just the search box.
When you're talking about the toolbar, you're talking about the button bar and the find dialog?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if I ever use that myself.
I use it all the time with Searchlight
right,
loaded.
But
I never used it before that.
Loaded, and I'm trying to think if I use it, and now that I think about it, I don't think I ever use the toolbar.
Yep, well, there you go. Yeah, well, it's not terribly useful unless the search is actually useful, and without Searchlight, search is not useful. So, yeah, there's a lot to be desired in our tools. We've got lots of things that we can do and will be doing one day.
Well, speaking of Searchlight, Searchlight is integrated into Web Velocity. Have you spoken to mm-hmm. Travis about getting that integrated into the baseline product?
No, not recently. It's kind of a tacit implication that something like it will go into the base at some point. One of the tensions with Searchlight is it came from the three-plane selectors browser, but it's nothing like the three-plane selectors browser. One of the things you can do with the three-plane selectors browser is get some search results and start clicking through the search results looking at the code. You can't do that in Searchlight, and it would be really, really nice if you could.
Yeah.
There is a way you can do it. You can open up, you can go to Browse, and you can pick Searchlight from the Browse menu, and it pops up this tiny window with just a search box in it. And if you do a search in there, like say type test, for example, and you start getting messages, you click on messages. If you click on a message, it'll pop it up in an RB. Further clicks will modify the same RB. So it's similar behavior to what you get with the three-plane selectors browser. However, that said, we just went through a procedure to get into a state where we could achieve that, and you didn't have to do that with the three-plane selectors browser. It was way easier. So that search box, that tiny one-line window with the search thing, that really should be the three-plane selectors browser. It should show you the search result area immediately and on the right give you a browser at the same time.
Right, and I've actually seen a number of people say they really like the three-pane selector. In fact, I've seen a couple of people say that they are not happy with the fact that the existing code doesn't work in 7.7 yet.
Correct, yes. And I'm not happy with the three-plane selectors browser's searching capabilities. So I pick Searchlight over the three-plane selectors browser. But in terms of then browsing the results, I picked the three-plane selectors browser over Searchlight. So I'm not there yet with everything I want Searchlight to be able to do.
So basically, you're kind of iterating towards what you want to get to in this.
Right. And one of the things that's kind of holding me back, too, is I want to do... This is the second rewrite of Searchlight. The first version of Searchlight was super slow and demonstrated what could be done. And the more people used it, the slower it got. Searchlight 2 is very, very fast. However, it reindexes the whole image every time you modify the code. And you can notice that. It can take a couple of seconds sometimes. Searchlight 3 will be an incremental indexer.
I didn't realize it re-indexed the whole image.
Well, as it was one of those things where if it works, why not? And if that turns out to be a problem, then we'll go fix it. And I think, for me, it has turned out to be a problem because there's more I want to do with it. I can't index comments because it's way too slow.
Right.
Right. That could take up to 30 seconds to pull it all from disk. So if I'm going to do that, I need to do it once and only then do incremental changes.
There are also probably a handful of customers that have truly ginormous images. You know, people that have these. There are projects out there with thousands and thousands and thousands of classes.
Right, so incremental indexing is what I want to do in Searchlight 3, and also integrating that three-plane selectors browser type answer as well. So that's where I want to go with Searchlight. I haven't even begun.
So Searchlight and the three-plane selectors are kind of in a flux where you're still iterating towards what you want to get to, but we don't have anything that looks definitive as far as where that's going yet.
Right. I mean, Searchlight works really well right now. I can't live without it. I just go nuts if I'm in a development image without it now. Because it's just so easy to get from A to B with it and find things. You know, watching my colleagues try and find stuff versus then I just type something vague in Searchlight and it finds it for me. It's just nuts. I mean, the level of findability.
Well, yes. Actually, one of the things that used to drive people nuts in VisualWorks, there is a search option in the browser for this now. It's kind of in an interestingly odd place. It's in one of the pull-downs from the top menu bar in the browser. It used to be until at least the 7 series that if you wanted to find a string in a method, not a selector name, just an arbitrary string, that was something that Smalltalk really sucked at, whereas, you know, that's something that most other traditional tools are really good at. And, you know, until 7, that was kind of hard to do. There was no easy way to find any arbitrary string in a method. So, you know, that kind of thing in Searchlight, you know, that's one of the things it's good at. It'll pull up pretty much any kind of reference. Yeah.
Yep. That's also its downfall sometimes.
Well, you know, if you do a grep over a large enough directory, you get the same kind of crappy results. You know, if you search for the wrong string, sometimes you get bozo results that don't mean anything.
Well, one thing that's annoyed me recently, it's a fairly recent addition in 7.7, is some of the new icons are named after the classes that they represent. So if you type object, for example, you get an answer that's the class, but you'll also get this method called object, which is this icon.
Yes. Yes.
and it confused the heck out of me for a while until I realized what was going on and relearned my behavior. But one of the things that Searchlight can do is jump you straight to a result if it's the only result that's reasonable. And it can't do that now with those icons.
Well, actually, I wanted to ask one question going back to Objective-C. This is not necessarily specifically to Objective-C, but, you know, in the upcoming release 7.7, we're going to finally have integrated into the product on Windows the ability to embed an ActiveX component inside of VisualWorks Windows. So if you want to embed, say, an Excel spreadsheet or an HTML viewer or what have you, you can do that on Windows now. You know, it's been a capability of Object Studio since time began, but we'll have that in VisualWorks. What are the possibilities of doing that on, you know, either Mac or Linux? I mean, never mind the Unix platforms, but just the two other client platforms that people use, Mac and Linux. What are the pathways that might get you there on those?
Well, you can do it on Mac with the Objective-C Connect. Right.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can drop, say, what do they call it, the Safari control, the WebKit control.
So to take a more concrete example as far as I'm concerned, if I wanted to build either that into Bottom Feeder or I wanted to build a Twitter client, I could drop an HTML control in either using WebKit on the Mac and the whatever HTML control I wanted to use on Windows. And that'd be pretty easy to do with the Objective-C runtime? Is it comparably easy, say, to the way it is to drop a component in over on the Windows platform?
Well, what do you do on the Windows platform?
Well, on the Windows platform, you basically have to pop up in the GUI builder, there's a ActiveX component. So it's probably not quite as simple looking. On Windows, you get an ActiveX widget, you put it in, and then when you do a context, I think it's, I did a screencast on this, and I'm trying to remember, on one of the properties pages, you pull down a menu, and there's a list of, you get a sheet of all of the ActiveX components that are available on your platform at this moment. Because, of course, it's, you know, at runtime, it's actually looking at your specific platform saying these are the ones you could install into your environment. So I can pick, you know, this HTML viewer or that HTML viewer or this spreadsheet component or what have you. So, you know, you're doing it kind of in on Windows, you're using the GUI builder for this. I mean, I suppose there's programmatic ways of doing it, but I know that you can use the GUI builder.
Well, there's no GUI builder support for the Objective-C Connect stuff. Maybe we should add that, I don't know. But you basically just do it with programming. Every window contains an NS view. You grab the NS view, you can put, say, an NS panel in it or a WebKit control or whatever you want in there. Just with message sends. So you just create it, give it bounds, initialize it, and then add it to the view. At that point, you're pretty much done. You just want to make sure that you're not drawing any small talk stuff in the same spot.
Right. Well, I think what that means is that when we get to 7.7, I think I'm going to change bottom feeder so that on Windows it's using some HTML component. On the Mac, it's using WebKit. And then I'll just be shipping I can't even come up with the name. It's your code, actually.
WSTyle, right?
Yeah, I'll be using WSTyle only on Unix and Linux platforms.
So Unix and Linux, I think you could probably make an explicit API reference to KHTML if they've got KDE installed. An explicit reference to the Mozilla engine, maybe, if you can find that.
Right, but that's where you get into the difficulty on these platforms. Is on Windows, you can guarantee that you're going to have the IE runtime lying around. And on the Mac, you can guarantee that you'll have the Safari WebKit lying around. I mean, you know...
Right, but there's no connect required. You just use DLLCC on Linux.
Right, what I'm saying is that it's even harder beyond that, because unless you ship the component that you're going to push in on Linux, you can't guarantee that on any given Linux desktop or Unix desktop, you're going to find a specific component.
Well, you could make it a KDE application, then you know you've got KHTML.
Okay, yeah, you could do that. I mean, you could tell people that that's a prerequisite, but you get what I'm meaning. If you're on Windows and Mac, there are constants that you can guarantee you know are going to be lying around. I mean, you know, there's no way you're going to find a Windows box that doesn't have IE on it, for instance, unless somebody really went out of their way to remove it.
I think there's a GNOME control to do HTML as well. So, I mean, if you're talking about Linux and not Unix, right, the problem is you've got bottom feeder for all kinds of Unixes as well.
Right. I think for Unix and Linux, I'm just going to say, you know, it's going to ship with WSTyle, and if libtidy happens to work on those platforms, you get halfway decent results.
And if libtidy doesn't work on those platforms, tough luck.
then you're down to the two-flower HTML parser that still ships with that puppy, and, you know, you get what you get.
Yep.
But if I could put WebKit in on Mac, and I could put, you know, the IE controller or the Firefox controller in on Windows, you know, you'd be pretty golden. You'd get pretty good results out of that. All I'd have to do is I have to remove the context menu stuff I do in that control right now on those two platforms.
Yeah.
That's not too hard. I mean, there's really in the HTML control, I think I have three menu picks. One of them is blog it. So basically I'd move those back up to the list box.
I don't know about the Windows one, but you can certainly set your own menu on the control on Mac OS X because you can create NS menus, right?
So. Yeah. Well, I know you can do that on Windows too. It's just that if I wanted to move those out, that wouldn't be hard. There's only like three menu options as it is now. And those menus on those platforms offer more picks than I'd want to provide anyhow.
Uh-huh. There you go. So, Smalltalk, interfacing with other stuff. Yeah.
Well, that actually is kind of an interesting thing for us because that makes it much... It sounds like with the next release of the product, it's going to be a little easier to talk to native components and integrate yourself more gracefully into the platform than it has been.
We're also doing a lot more using OS services in 7.7. Like time zones, for example, use the operating system to do time zone conversions across platform. The focused window uses APIs across platform to find out which window is focused. We're currently working right now on timers as a VI level timer interface, which, you know, works across platform. It's it's an interesting direction to go, moving stuff out of the VM into the VI. It's very tricky. There's a lot of things that you have to investigate.
Right, but anything in the image instead of the VM is automatically easier for end consumers of the product to deal with, because if they don't like the way it's implemented or want to do something else, at least they have the ability to go down and screw with it.
Yeah.
If it's in the VM, it's kind of hidden completely from them, and it's completely opaque as far as the average developer is concerned, because... You know, your average Smalltalk developer can muck with stuff in the image, and they might shoot themselves in the foot, but, you know, they can at least muck with stuff. And in the VM, it's, you know, how many people are going to want to go down to the VM and hack C code and then hope that they don't break the VM while they're at it?
Yep. Well, compiling our VM isn't the easiest thing in the world either, but...
Well, beyond that problem, it's just that the VM is, just by dint of it being a VM, is a fairly complex piece of C code. So asking people to say, well, go customize based on, you know, based on go hacking the C code in the VM, that's a harder question to ask than say, well, go and add that capability into the image.
Well, I mean, one of the things that the image does well is change strategies. It's very dynamic like that. So say the timer code that Martin Kubetic and I have been working on Windows, there are three different ways that timers can actually run. The thread pool timers, the timer queue timers, and the VM primitives. So that's, I mean, this is an advantage of being in the VI, is that we can pick and choose exactly which API we want to use. And if you're on Vista, we use the thread pools. If you're on XP, we use the thread queues, and anything else you drop back to the VM primitives. I mean, that's pretty neat, I think. The same is sort of true of Linux. You've got the POSIX timers, the timer
right.
APIs, and then if that doesn't work, you can fall back to set iTimer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of neat to be able to program that kind of dynamicity into the C code is a little bit tricky, because you have to be able to link all the symbols at compile time.
Right. But it also gives you the ability to customize to a platform at the image level, as opposed to having to hack it in at the VM, which there's a much larger pool of people who are able to hack in the system stuff at the image level than are able to hack it in at the VM level.
Something else that's changing kind of in 7.7 along those lines is string encodings. Because we're going to what's termed the Unicode VM for Windows, where we're compiling against with Unicode on instead of Unicode off. Instead of calling the A methods, like message box A, we call the W methods, message box W, for the wide characters instead of the ANSI code page characters.
That means we'll finally have proper Unicode support in the next version of the product.
Right, so one thing that was hidden down the VM is what the platform's preferred character encoding was, and now that's pushed up to the VI. So things like file names, you know, actually encoding file names from the file name that you get from the operating system, the bytes, that's now up in the VI instead of hidden down the VM. And potentially down the road, all the string conversion code in the VM can just disappear, because it can all happen in the VI. So more and more stuff is just sort of slowly bubbling up into the VI.
Right, and that also makes long-term maintenance easier, because, again, it's easier to hack Smalltalk than C.
Well, that's the theory. We put it to the test. I guess, you know, if that weren't the case, why the heck would we bother programming in Smalltalk at all?
That's a good point.
If we can't do this stuff in Smalltalk, and I know I've ranted this before, then it's not a terribly good language. You know, if you can model the aerodynamics of a plane flying through the sky, as I know some small talkers have done, then you should be able to model and efficiently communicate to the operating system.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Well, you know, some of this is just inertia of the way small talkers have thought for a long time. I mean, we've had this conversation before, but There's not invented here, which a lot of engineering staffs have, and then there's not invented in Smalltalk, which is kind of specific to the parochialism that's permeated Smalltalk for a long time, where people have had this notion that you must implement it in Smalltalk even if there's a perfectly good set of libraries you could reuse. And it seems to me that we're finally getting a little bit over that.
Yeah, actually, in 7.7, you have the capacity to use IEEE floats as well. That's not on by default, unless you load CSide 2.9. If you load CSide 2.9, it'll turn it on for you, which might be a surprise, but probably won't affect your code in any way. But in 7.8, we'll probably turn that on straight away. And that basically means that if you do a divide by zero, then you get a float object that is, you know, not a number, versus an exception that was divide by zero. And that's an interesting change. So, I mean, that goes along the lines of doing stuff the way other people do it instead of the way we've done it or historically.
Right. Well, I think that pretty much covers the breadth of what we wanted to talk about this week. I suppose I ought to briefly mention what seems to be coming up. We've got a couple of interesting podcasts queued up. We've got Ernest Miklay coming up next week, and he's done or been doing a ton of really interesting stuff. He's the author of the Cloud Fork stuff, the support for the Amazon Web Services.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also involved in the Glare stuff, the interface to Flex, Air, all that stuff.
Yep.
So there's a lot of stuff we'll cover with him. And then we have one of the other engineers coming on sometime in the next week or two, Les Koyman. We're going to talk to him about the internationalization work that you briefly mentioned when you were talking about Unicode.
Right.
But that's a rather large topic all by itself.
I'm also heading to ISOG in France. I'll be talking about web velocity there, so come along to ISOG and see web velocity in action. If you've seen web velocity in action by one of the managers, you know, Arden or James, that's the beginner's presentation. So I'll be going into depth about how you use web velocity.
Yeah, now now that I've taken the shot to the head on that, I will be giving two web velocity presentations in the short term future also, July 9th in New York City and July 23rd in Boston.
Right. Boston.
Yep. Well, you know, I have to put up with Red Sox fans, so, you know, I'll be going incognito.
Yes. They'll know.
All right. Well, I guess that should do it for this week. That's a wrap.
Cool.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
In this next segment, I have Dave Buck with this week's Cimbron Design Minute.
This is David Buck with today's Cimbron Design Minute. One software technique I often see is a method that returns an array of classes to use for some purpose. For example, you might have a method that returns an array of the number classes, like integer, float, and fraction. The problem with this technique is that the method needs to be modified whenever any new class needs to be added to the list. The technique also can't deal with any classes that might be dynamically loaded or packaged out of a runtime image. The better way to handle this problem is to set up a registry. When they are loaded, the classes can add themselves into the registry. If they're unloaded, they can remove themselves from the registry. As with anything, there are times when the simple approach is the best, and a method that lists a number of classes is fine. Before you make this decision, however, consider whether this list will ever change and what the consequences will be if it does. This has been the Cimbron Design Minute. Cimbron offers training and consulting in object-oriented development and the Smalltalk programming language. For more information, visit www.cimbron.com or email info@cimbron.com.
Up next is Randall Schwartz with a quick look around the Squeak world with Squeak News.
This is Randall Schwartz here with your latest Squeak News. You can find all this news and more at news.squeak.org. Phil Schiller led the keynote presentation recently at the Apple Worldwide Developers Conference. One of the many causes for celebration he had was the phenomenal success of the iPhone App Store, which now has 50,000 applications available for download. Although he was careful to be even-handed in giving credit to all iPhone developers for helping Apple achieve this success, he must have been secretly thanking John McIntosh, who is turning into a one-man app wave. Without John's recent batch of new Squeak-based applications, Phil would have been left announcing the much less satisfactory figure of 49,994 applications. In case you missed it, John's latest announcement was that his Fraction app is now available for calculations involving unlimited-size fractions and factorials, as it attempts to preserve numeric accuracy to an unprecedented degree. The new app joins the two apps based on his wiki server that John already has on the App Store. We look forward to seeing if the notoriously Byzantine App Store approval process will be able to keep up with John's flood of new applications.
For Squeak Weekly News, this is Randall Schwartz. You can also check out my blog at methodsandmessages.vox.com.
If you enjoyed this week's podcast, please tell other people about it. We'd love to have more Smalltalkers and more developers learning about Smalltalk through the Industry Misinterpretation podcast. If you have feedback, send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. Head on over to Facebook, join the Industry Misinterpretations group, head on over to Ning and join the Small Talkers group, or head on over to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for the podcast. In the meantime, have fun with Small Talk.